Howdy, everyone. My name is William Christensen, and I'm the publisher of Avatar Press. Hopefully, you've all been reading our books and enjoying Crossed. And it is so exciting what we're going to be telling you today. Garth and I have, you know, this great relationship that's grown from working together on books to, expanding forth into other ventures. He's got lots of things he wants to be doing above and beyond just writing comics, and we figured out a way to scratch that itch. So, without further ado, Garth and I have got the rights to do filmed Crossed back in our control. And we're going to be launching with a series of all-new Crossed webisodes, written and directed by Garth. So, those are going to be... Yeah, they're excited too. Those are going to be yearly. We're going to try to do a season each year. They'll be free. See, it's an awesome thing. they'll be free for the world to see. We're hoping to shoot the first season next spring and debut sometime later next year. It's all builds towards working on a cross-feature film, which is also all written and directed by Garth. I mean, all of this is just... And also, all of this is no studio bullshit. This is Garth and I controlling every step, so it's his pure vision. So, without me blathering on anymore, let me turn it over to the man. Garth Ennis.
Thank you kindly. Yes, as William says, we do have the rights back. There was a sort of an abortive attempt to make a Crossed film. And really, I think it was our experience there that led us to go this route. When you work with Hollywood, there's a certain kind of philosophy there that when they see something like Crossed, or any project, doesn't matter, many of them don't necessarily want to make that into a film, but maybe it reminds them of the horror idea that they've always had, that they can take what you have and kind of mold it into... I'm sure you've seen it many times with the characters you enjoy in comics, where the film that comes out is like it in name only, maybe in the lead character, but the rest of it seems to have just disappeared without trace. Well, that's what we're keen to avoid. And that's why we're going this route. It took a little while, but we've got it back. As William said, we're going to start with these webisodes. The idea, I think, would be to have little vignettes with a kind of a narrative running through them. I'll give you an example. There was a scene in the first Crossed story in which one character, a guy called Kittrick, who's very morose, never says much, you finally find out what it was that happened to his family. He was swimming, and he saw his family carved up on shore, and then the cross sort of peppered him with shotgun fire so that he couldn't come ashore. Something like that. That would make, and I'm not saying we're definitely going to do this one, but it's an example of what you might have. That would make a good 5 minutes that would then be part of a larger narrative. So that's going to be the kind of thing we're going to be doing. Maybe just looking at how a number of disparate characters came together after their disastrous encounters with the Crossed. And that's how we'll start.
Yep. They are perfectly timed. So, we'll get back and talk more about the film stuff. You know, Cross continues to be a vital part of our publishing strategy, but you know, we're not going to relaunch every year. We're not going to throw out everything that's come before and say, oh, now it's all happening about 2 years later. We're not, there's no all new, there's no, it's the 52 Cross. Nope, it's, we have Badlands, which will stay bi-weekly. We've, you know, shipped Rob sent us press 17 issues, all on time. They continue to roll right out, always with, you know, the best writers in the biz. That's continuing. And Garth is coming back for issue 25.
That's right.
A new arc with him and the artist Raulo Caceres. He's awesome. That'll be shipping in March, which will also have our crossed C-Day event for 2013. We did C-Day this year. Everybody seemed to really dig it, the mass, all that stuff. So we're going to come up with a whole new promotion to just give stores a chance to, you know, do something extra for crossed. And everybody loves dressing up as crossed. So that'll be in March. The other exciting thing is we've already talked about and planned out the next time Garth will be writing an arc, which is issue 50. Mm. And that is going to be the Patient Zero story. So we've got a little ways to go before we actually get there, but that should be pretty exciting.
Mm. Yeah, I'm planning on coming back to Cross roughly once a year to the Badlands title and doing three, maybe four issues. The one you'll see next year introduces a small military unit, and for the first time I think you'll see someone actually having a go back at the Crossed. And then the story that William's talking about, which we'll refer to as Patient Zero, you will see those characters back at the start when it all went, when it all started to go horribly wrong, and you'll see how they became part of the initial outbreak. And in the meantime, I think we have plenty of good stuff in between. We'll have Cy Spurrier, who writes the excellent webcomic.
The webcomic continues. Wish You Were Here.
Yeah. He's actually going to be doing a bit of Badlands. We've got Dave Hine at the moment. I believe David Lapham is coming back. Yeah, we've got some great people. I must say the webcomic in particular impresses the hell out of me every week. If you're not reading it, I advise you to check it out.
Yeah, crossedcomic.com. You know, new chapter up roughly every week. We have a few skip weeks in there, but then we also, much like we did with Freak Angels, then we collect every 6 months, and the first collection of Wish You Were Here just came out. So, you know, folks that want to be able to get it in print as well, which we really greatly appreciate, because that's how we pay for the whole thing, that first collection's out. But Wish You Were Here is going to continue on, so that in Badlands. And it's an exciting time. You know, Crossed is doing well, the trades are doing really well, and it's great because it's Garth and I getting to control the whole enchilada, and now we're continuing that with the film stuff.
I suppose for a pair of egomaniacal control freaks like us, it's yeah. Worked out very well. Yes, with the, I was saying this to William earlier, I mean, with the boys coming to an end, I've been, I actually finished it over a year ago, but I've been kind of aware that I need to get as many, well, I certainly want to get as many new things out there as possible. So you'll see about, over the next year or so, you're going to see about six new titles coming out. There'll be, let's think. Now, I think Dynamite have announced Red Team and the last series of Battlefields. With Avatar, of course, there'll be more Crossed. There's the War series will be starting at long last, sort of in the same format as Battlefields. And there'll be a couple more books I can't say much about right now. There's a sci-fi book, and there's also one that, you know, it's very hard to describe, but I promise you'll know it when you see it.
You know, they're, yeah, we're actually really far ahead on both those projects. Got top flight creative teams. You know, we should be announcing those probably early next year, coming out next summer, next fall. So, I guess at this point we'll throw up some questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
So, just to be clear, all your new books are coming out through Avatar and only Avatar.
I know Avatar and Dynamite.
And Dynamite.
Yeah, I've really come to see myself as most comfortable in the independence. Obviously, I'm doing this Nick Fury book for Marvel right now, but and I would probably, if I got an idea for it, go back and do the Punisher just because I like the character so much. But I'm not going to do that until I have something I think is kind of worthy of the Max run that I did. For the moment, it's going to be The Independent. It's going to be Avatar and Dynamite, roughly half and half.
Yeah. Because he's hard himself.
This is not true. I think partly it comes from the comics and movies that I enjoyed as a kid. The British comics were, I think, a bit harsher than American comics. The funny thing is that many of them featured American characters, but British comics were more influenced by American film. The kind of stuff that you saw in the 70s, like Death Wish and Dirty Harry and The Wild Bunch and stuff like that, that was a strong influence on British comics. So there was a harsher ethos run through them. And partly that, partly the kind of fiction I'm attracted to as a result, and partly my ideas of the way the world seems to me to work. It can be a grim place, a harsh place, and I think one of the reasons I can't ever really relate to superhero comics, not having read them as a kid, is that I can't see the kind of strange morality that runs through those books. I can't see its reflection anywhere in the real world. So I guess it comes from that combination of factors.
Yes, for sure.
And I was wondering if you had that character arc played out since issue one, or did it kind of make more sense as it went along?
The Boys, because I rather egotistically assumed that the series would run its full course, unlike Preacher, where I thought, well, let's jump in with both feet and hope. I did have most of it planned out. And that ending, yes, I had planned. The difference was that initially I thought that Huey was going to drink Mother's Milk, and then go and fight Butcher. But as the series progressed, I thought, no, that's absolutely ridiculous. This has never been about physical conflict between the two. Apart from anything else, Huey could have the strength of 1,000 elephants, and Butcher would still kick the shit out of him. So it's a question of, you know, conviction. But as I went on, I realised, no, it's about them talking. It's about that conversation between them where Butcher's plan has come to the end that it has, and all that's left is for the two to sit and talk. And there should be an element of slapstick too, because if Huey succeeds at anything, it has to be by accident. And that's why he falls out the window, you know, and all that. So yes, I mean, that was set from the beginning. One of the other scenes, actually, that was set from the beginning was the one where Butcher gets his hands on Jack from Jupiter with the carving knife. Like, I thought of that very early on, because the superhero type that says a magic word and turns into... Yeah, that's one I've always thought was, like, ripe for satire, or at least... attack, and I was thinking, well, he could cut his tongue out or something, and then I thought, no, he just pins him to the wall and guts him. And I get it was one of those scenes that when I was thinking of Butcher, I thought, yes, that would define him quite nicely. That would be, that's probably the worst thing you see him do in terms of, you know, violence against another individual, and I think it's a nicely apocalyptic moment.
Yeah.
In The Boys, is that when Frenchman is telling Huey his origin, does that really happen? Or is he being a dick?
Well, he's not being a dick.
Thank you, sir.
But there's something weird going on there, because, I mean, the guy's French mother and father refer to him as Frenchie. You know, any second now, someone's going to ask a serious question that I give a really depressing answer to, and you're still going to be getting, hooray!
And then he killed himself. Hooray! Yeah. Yes, you.
Just curious, go ahead, somebody.
Yep.
Am I a religious man? No, I'm a...
What the hell is Preacher about?
Well, write what you loathe, you know? No, I'm not. I'm a more and more hardcore atheist with each passing year. No. I mean, Preacher, along with Wormwood, actually, takes religious figures and uses them as characters in a narrative, which of course they are. But it's, if you look at Wormwood is not unlike my League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, because Alan takes characters from literature and puts them together in a team and gets a story out of it. Well, so do I.
Yeah.
No, it's just, obviously, The Boys was the one that began my relationship with Dynamite. And at the time, you know, I had a couple of dozen publishers to choose from, and they just seemed to me to be not too big, not too small. They were just the right place to go. But after that, it was just a case of what... where I felt like going. I mean, also, it's worth pointing out that a lot of the work I did for Avatar initially was with Jason Burroughs, and of course he's exclusive to you. Yes. And so if I wanted to continue working with Jason, which I did, I wanted to... it was going to be for Avatar. It's funny that after 303 I asked Jason what he wanted to do next, and he said a zombie book, and I was sure Wormwood was going to turn out to be a zombie book, but it wasn't, so he had to wade through 6 issues of that to get his zombie book.
Yeah.
First off, I want to say thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you.
It's the pinnacle life, baseball, baseball. I'm just curious. I've heard a lot of talk about Boys the movie. Is this real? Because every time I look on IMDb, it says yes, it says no, it says yes, it says no.
Do you know, if you keep up with that stuff, you probably know better than I do, because I learned fairly early on to avoid getting excited about this stuff until it's absolutely real. So I can tell you that the option sold and that it looks like it's going to be renewed, but beyond that, any notion of a creative team or actors or anything like that is pure pie in the sky until you see it confirmed. Instead of some, you know, they interview a director and he says, well, so and so would have to play such and such a character, and people then start speculating like crazy and going back and forth and discussing what that actor would be like. That, you know, it's meaningless, utterly meaningless. It's something the guy said off the top of his head. It means nothing.
But see, this is another great example of why we're doing Crossed ourselves. It's to avoid this whole, well, yeah, somebody's optioned something and maybe you'll have, maybe it won't. We're just going to do it. Yeah. I'm sorry, I
missed. How do we source the actors and other people?
We'll start the whole casting process once we determine which producers we're going to be using to help us with all that. We're probably shooting in L.A. Just due to the vast volume of folks we have out there. So there'll be casting notices and stuff once we get a little further along the road for that. Yeah, who's next? Go ahead.
Are they monthly episodes, weekly?
As far as the release of the episodes? Yes. Well, like I said, there'll be 6 in a season. We'll probably put them out weekly once we start doing them. I don't think that's been firmly set in stone, but yeah, something like that. Yeah, on the back.
First of all, thanks for Hitman on the last trade.
Thank you.
It broke my heart in the last day. That's what it's called. I'm curious about Cross. Does that originally just like, I had an idea of like 10 really disturbing issues? Or did you have like the entire origin and storyline drawn?
That was initially just going to be the 10 episodes. It was actually William who came to me and said, look, I think we can do more with this. I understand you don't want to write it all, but I think we have a world here, and we have a monster, and we could turn it into something, and there's a lot of good writers I'd like to let loose on it. And I said, well, I thought about it, and I said, that's fine. I said, just keep my characters out of it. So long as the ones that were in the 10-issue story who died stay dead, so long as Stan and Cindy are never seen again, or their dog, so long as we stick to the basic rules of the Crossed, how they work and what their world is like, then I'm okay with it. And once William got things up and running, that started to spark more ideas for me, and that's why I was able to do the first three for Badlands, and that I will pop back every year to do more.
But he won't let me go back and do the origin of Horsecock. I want one thing in life.
Well, I think he chopped the cock off a horse, didn't he? That's his secret origin.
The end. Yeah, with face paint.
Thank you.
I have one question. Why, sir, do you hate superheroes so much?
Why do I hate superheroes so much? I don't actually hate them so much, although their chokehold on this industry does depress me. When I go into a comic book store and I see a wall of superhero titles, I do find my heart sinking a bit. Compare that when you go into a bookstore and you see a vast variety of general fiction, with genres kind of tucked away at the back. The reason I don't have any particular affection for them is simply that I didn't grow up reading superhero comics, and with any kind of children's entertainment, if you don't have the childhood affection, you can't really enjoy them as an adult, any more than I would expect you to enjoy the characters in the comics that I grew up on, because it is ultimately entertainment for kids. I wish we could branch out. I wish we could have comics like films, novels, plays, TV shows about absolutely everything, but we seem unable to do so, and it kind of kills me. Terrific medium, crap industry.
Yeah, I think sure.
Yes. I did one for Avatar a few years ago called Streets of Glory. Mike Wolfer drew that one. And you can get that at the Avatar booth. Beyond that, no immediate plans, but I'm bound to go back to it one day.
And what's the status of the major movie?
See the answer to Boys.
Yeah, see. Frankly, see the answer to Boys. Every couple of years, they sell the option. Steve and I split a nice check. Nothing happens.
Which frankly, is ideal.
Yeah, it's not a good idea to rely on that, but...
I bet, yeah.
Hi, since this is kind of a new thing, doing the Cross series, having complete control of it, would that be the ideal way you want to do something like a Preacher web series? In a perfect world where you don't have to worry about rights?
That bit at the end is really the kicker, isn't it? I don't know. I mean, HBO looked like the best place to do Preacher, the ideal place to do Preacher, but it would have been a very expensive show. And as Mark Johnson said at the time, he said he was the guy I was adapting it with, and he said, I don't think this is going to go because there's the money, but also it's blasphemy. And he said no one's ever really done this before. No one's ever done a series or a movie or anything where they say God's real, but he's a dick. And he turned out to be absolutely right. People who look at Preacher either get it or they don't. And even if they get it, they might not like it at all. It's just too big and weird to expect people to put a lot of money behind. As for webisodes, I think you'd run smack into exactly the same problem. You've got to spend the money to make it look good. Saint of Killers shows up for the first time, and it has to look like hell's come to earth. Otherwise, there's no point in doing it. So I wouldn't hold my breath.
So So, yeah.
Hi. You mentioned that you're also thinking of writing and directing a Cross movie. How are you looking to approach going into directing, and are some of your influences in comics the same as how I do for film?
Well, most of my influences come from outside comics. As I said, the British comics, as I read as a kid, were all movie influenced. So for me, it's maybe a shorter step than most. Even today, I read very, very few comics. I read Saga.
Yeah.
And that's it. So I'm just not really influenced by comics at all. I was reading Scalped.
So do you read, say, Seymour Films, maybe?
Yes, I do see more films. And I read a lot of books. I ended up as one of those people that that reads more non-fiction than fiction. Really, because, yes, truth is stranger. Things happen that you read about out on the kind of extreme edges of human experience that you can't believe and yet are true.
Yeah, one more.
Once again, thanks for everything you've done.
Thank you.
Litter my collection. It's the best I've ever read. What really was always kicking me was The Boys, how in the end I guess you and Derek had associated how Lee Huey had that Simon Pegg-ish look.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I was wondering, if you did do something like had creative control for a Boys or Creature Movie, who would be like your dream cast if you could do it yourself?
Well, I never really talk about that because, you see, what then happens is this gets out and people say, he says that only one guy can play Huey. The Simon Pegg thing was an accident. I said that Huey should be a wee baldy guy with a goatee in a hoodie. And Derek said, maybe like the guy from Spaced. And I said, yeah, like the guy from Spaced. And Derek is somewhat literal-minded, so... Simon Pegg.
What's
your attraction to like characters like Fury, Tommy Monahan, Frank? I mean, you always write them best. I think Frank, you had the longest running writing.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, it's long, but you know, those are always your best characters.
Well, again, because they're like the characters I read as a kid. I read a weekly anthology, all British comics at that point, and the few that remain today, were and are weekly anthologies, black and white, five stories an issue. There were also little digest-sized books of 60 pages. They were almost all war stories. And there was another weekly anthology called Battle, which again was war stories. And the characters were all effectively hard-bitten gunmen.
Shoveling up, taking home—you don't see that today.
No, well, it's just that bit harsher, and it's not gonna work coming out of Superman's mouth. It's just not Captain America's mouth. Yeah.
Yes, you may. Yep.
Yeah. Fairly obviously a crude comment about some of the young ladies starring in Twilight would be for... And Cassidy, of course, came from a very different tradition in vampire stories. In fact, almost a one-movie tradition. Cassidy was inspired by Near Dark, which, to me, is a terrific film. And a very interesting take on vampires. The notion of them as sort of verminous drifters, parasites that always have to keep on the move. You know, stick around too long and build a castle and they'll get you, so you got to keep moving. And that's obviously a very different approach. And I think this ties into Crossed in a way, because I've noticed horror movie characters, the vampire, the werewolf, the zombie, getting kind of acceptable humanized, in the case of vampires, cute, likable, adorable. And when I set out to do Crossed, I thought, it's going to be horror. It has to horrify, terrify, unsettle. It can't be something that you can kind of make friends with in your mind. I mean, to me, the best horror film ever seen is Alien. That thing, that nightmarish creature that H.R. Giger designed, that haunts my dreams to this day. That's what horror should do if you're going to create a creature, a monster.
Yeah.
You've written a lot of violence in your work, of course, and I think more than writers that write violence as action, you actually write about the consequences of violence. And I was curious, now that it's been about 20 years or so, writing, has your relationship to violence in fiction or in the world changed?
I would maintain that we all have a responsibility to deal with the consequences of violence honestly. That hasn't changed. Seeing how the world is, seeing the way violence occurs, its consequences, I think it's up to us to be true to that and to be true about that. I can't write the kind of... You see, most comics are very, very violent. It's just that the violence somehow doesn't have the effect that real violence does. An example I've used before, rather a crude one, but imagine if Batman was real. Now imagine a 220-pound man, 6'6", kicking someone in the face. It's going to break their neck, but they can't possibly show you that, and they can't possibly deal with that. Same old problem, really. Most comics are realistic, but only up to the point that it suits them, and then they have to draw back, and what you're left with is something that doesn't reflect anything that's ever happened to anyone.
Yeah?
You are a phenomenal, brilliant writer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Plotting, character development, and even in prose, when your characters can tell stories, they're going to butcher that. It's phenomenal prose. So what drew you to make comics instead of write novels?
I think what drew me to comics was, well, I never gave up on them. Everyone, you know, gives up comics in their teens, then comes back, if they do, comes back later. I didn't, because just when I was starting to lose interest in comics, Alan Moore came along, and he was working for one of the anthologies I mentioned, one called 2000 AD. You can get some of his stuff, Isaiah. There's The Ballad of Halo Jones. Right. Then you know, DR and Quinch, Skiz, The Future Shocks. And he just kept me interested in comics at a time when I might have given them up, simply because I found the quality of his work stood up to much of what I was reading in prose. And so that's why I kept reading comics, and that's why I was able to see... Do you remember at the end of the 80s, Watchmen had happened, Dark Knight had happened, and there was a lot of talk? Right. It led to kind of an attempt, particularly in British comics, to capitalize on that. And it looked like there was... they weren't even that great. It looked like there was an opening for someone to write stories. I started out doing kind of a political story, and then I did a sort of a religious satire. And that's more or less how I found my way on Hellblazer. But it really was that point at the end of the 80s, early 90s, where all of a sudden you could write comics about anything. You didn't have to go for the traditional stories, topics, and so on. And that's just what hooked me in. I might write a novel at some point. The trouble with writing a novel is you have to describe all the stuff that you usually get some person to draw for you. But I might. Oh, well, thank you. I like writing prose, and the few times that I have. I'd like to think I would never actually give up on comics. But yes, I would like to try other things.
Yeah.
What's your inspiration?
Uh, Dog Welder, actually, Steve Dillon invented Dog Welder. He and a friend were coming up with stupid superheroes in a bar about 25 years ago, and Dog Welder was one of them. And when I told him I was putting Section 8 together, he said, well, you can have Dog Welder. Bueno Excelente is actually a chum of ours, of me and John McRae's, who shall remain nameless, was telling us about a porno movie in which a chap expressed his appreciation of a young lady's actions by saying bueno over and over again and excelente. And this was a night in the pub. He told us about this, and the more he told us, you know what it's like in a night in the bar. There's a phrase usually gets tossed around for the night, and the drunker you get, the more it's... But the more this got said, bueno, excelente, I was thinking, this isn't just someone shouting something. This is a name. That's like a first name and a surname. Bueno, excelente. And from there, I took the obvious step to a sweating pervert with a 36-inch erection who fought crime. So that's where that one came from.
We got time for a couple more. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
What's happening in French for you?
You'll never know. You'll never know. You see, the thing is, that's the kind of character where keep it going for too long and you have to answer that question. And I kind of like the ambiguity there. Like, as the guy says, we'll never know. You know, now we'll never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Secondary characters? Do you mean supporting characters in stories or just lesser known?
Jimmy the Rabbit. Or Jimmy the Rabbit.
Yeah. Well, when I think about what I'm doing right now, it's mostly new stuff, but yeah, from time to time. I do like to. I mean, thinking about it, I don't know if you're one of the three people on a cat who read dicks, but yeah. They were... There you go.
All here. Thank you. Yeah.
But they, Doogie and Ivor, were actually supporting characters in the first thing I ever wrote. And a year or so after I wrote that, I just thought, hang on, there's a comedy in this. If I take these two guys out of my crushingly depressing political drama and I can and put them in a comedy... And it worked out quite well, in a no-sales-at-all kind of way.
There is actually, for, you know, you 11 folks, there is another Dick series coming next year.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, more
games. Yeah, the jokes write themselves. All right, time for the last couple. Questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Please, you can wait.
Not really. I mean, I like to think Tulip was very much her own person and not a device to show how women are treated. It was more of a commentary on the characters of Jesse and Cassidy. Jesse, for a man with the past that he has, is remarkably enlightened and trusts Tulip to look after herself until the moment comes when he's scared about her getting killed, because of course he did watch her get killed in front of him, and that's when he pulls tricks like, you know, drugging her or climbing out the window or whatever. So that's Jesse, you know, he's 95% enlightened. And Cassidy, on the other hand, is... Well, you know, the more you look at him, the worse he gets. He's the kind of guy, you know, walks into a bar and it's God bless all here and drinks all round, and he seems like a wonderful guy and the women love him. But the more you find out, the darker it gets. So it's more of a commentary on those two than it is Tulip.
Yeah. Since you dislike superheroes so much... And I didn't say hate. Hmm. Why do you think it is that you write Superman better than anyone else ever?
I don't. I would guess at the time it was probably a chance to say something about America more than it was about Superman. I mean, I know the story you're talking about. There's another element to it of, if you've read Miracle Man?
Yes.
Right, which is, to me, is the best of Alan Moore's 80s work. It actually eclipses Watchmen and V for Vendetta. It's stunning. And I'll add my plaintive cry to the chorus of people attempting to get it back in print. There's an element, too, of that interests me of, instead of being a superhero, just being superhuman and living on a level above and beyond anything we could ever imagine, that interests me. And a couple of other books that go into that would be Warren Ellis's Avatar books, like Black Summer. Yeah, well, Super Gods in particular. I thought that was a fascinating look at what it would be like to be above human, and not just be physically more than human, but mentally too. It would change the way you thought. Warren has the character who is created to be India's superhero, and he's told, right, defend India. And unfortunately for India, how he sees that is he has to solve the problem of crumbling infrastructure and overpopulation. So he burns down one, and that takes care of the other, which is a beyond human or less than human solution, but it's not a human one.
Okay, last couple. Yeah.
Back to the Cross episode of your film. Cross is great. One of the things that makes it great is you go places that a lot of mainstream stuff or actually most of mainstream now that don't go. When you put out the film, it's going to be watered down or anything like that, or are you going
to
just?
Well, the idea would be to do an R-rated film. I mean, that would be the whole point of keeping control. It would be quite easy to turn it over to Hollywood, and in 10 years from now, you might get something.
Ooh, sparkly crossed.
Yeah,
no, it'll be, you know, by the fact that we control it, we can keep it nice and brutal. The webisodes will be R-rated. Anything that, you know, we shoot that won't even meet that cut will do, or the webisodes will be R-rated, and the DVD release will be unrated. So anything we've got that we think, you know, we want to shoot from a different angle or handle slightly differently, but we have a great, really extra vicious take. You know, we'll put that on the DVD. Yeah. Yep.
You mentioned British comics. I love your name there.
I have no plans to do anything with working in the British comic industry or what's left of it. There is an old character called Johnny Red, and you can actually buy reprints from Titan, which I would write like that if I got a chance to, but you know, the sales would be minuscule. So no actual plans for British comics. If you want to check some of this stuff out, go up to the 2000 AD booth and check out things like Judge Dredd, Nemesis the Warlock, Slain, and take my advice and go for the earlier stuff. And there's one book I should... I said earlier that I wouldn't expect anyone to enjoy the stories I read as a kid. There's one you might. There's one I find transcends all boundaries. It's called Charlie's War. It's by Pat Mills, who did Martial Law, and a very good artist, dead now, called Joe Colquhoun. Charlie's War is the story of a 16-year-old boy who joins the British Army in time for the Battle of the Somme during the First World War, and it follows him through the next 2 years of the war, and it is quite stunning. I believe it's the finest comic strip ever to see print, and it's back in print now after about 30 years from Titan Books. I urge you to check it out.
Okay, well, I think that's going to wrap us up. I want to thank you all for coming out and your support.
Thank you.